Blog Talk Radio.
Morning after
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and afternoon, angels. This is Diane, and I am one of the angel coaches on Tari Abbott's Angel Coach Network. And for those of you who are not familiar with it, it's basically a collection of life coaches and psychics and people who can really help you with your life. And we all have separate shows now. And depending on what you want to hear about or what you want to talk about, you can tune in to several of us. Anyway, today, I'm going to talk about several different topics because I'm not sure what our listeners would like to hear from me the most, but I get asked about several things. So number one is book writing and publishing. I have one book published by a publisher, and then I have two other books that I self-published. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. There's a lot of aspiring authors out there. I think everybody has a book inside of them, sometimes not really knowing where to start. But a lot of people have started. A lot of people have manuscripts sitting in desk drawers somewhere that they've worked on for years, and they just don't know what to do with it. And I'm here to help anybody who wants to get their book out there. So that is one of the topics I'm going to cover. Second topic is relationships. I do a lot of relationship coaching with friends and family especially, but people who I don't know that well, but they've read the book that I wrote with Cherie, which is called You Mean There's a Law That Says He Has to Be Attracted to Me, A Psychic and a Humorist Explain Metaphysics. And I am the humorous part of the duo, with Cherie being the psychic, and we got together and wrote a book that is really helpful to people, not just for relationships, but the primary cause of the relationship issues you have is oftentimes your relationship with yourself. And it's a great self-help book. It's full of humor and enlightenment. And I will talk about some of the material that we've covered in that book. So relationships are always one of the number one things that people have issues with, that go to psychics for, and that always seems to be the predominant. But I also would like to cover ghosts. My son passed away 7 years ago almost, and the first book I wrote was called The Return of Mikey, and it's published through Joshua Tree Publishing Company, and it's a biography on Mikey's life and death and life after death. And I've talked to numerous people when I've readings and promotions, interviews, talking about the book and talking about Mikey. And that is something that I most frequently get asked is, you know, what kind of a relationship do you have with your son now? What does he do? How do you know that he's around you? And people who have just lost someone close to them, they're just undergoing the horrible grieving process that that we all have to go through when you lose someone you love. And I feel like I've helped a lot of people really kind of push their way through that. And so that's another thing that I would like to talk about is the grief process, the healing process, as well as your continuing relationship with your loved one. And it doesn't, you don't have to be a certain religious belief. You can be, you know, I guess as long as you're not a total atheist, which is fine. Some of the nicest people I know are atheistic or agnostic. But if you have any belief in the afterlife and you have questions about it, that's something that I will be taking calls on in subsequent shows. But this show, I'm just kind of going to give you a brief synopsis of my experiences with my son's death and after death and other relatives or friends, family members who have passed on that I really feel like are still around me. So I'm going to talk about book writing first, since I know I've had a couple people say, you know, I just need some direction, and that's why they wanted to tune in. They wanted to tune in to me to find out where to begin when they want to write a book and get a book published. So the first thing is you've got to have your storyline, you know, whether it's a biography, whether it is a self-help book, whether it's a fiction book, you need to already have formulated in your mind this is where I'm going to start and this is where I'm going to end, or this is at least the path that it's going to take me. So with your book writing, before you even sit down, you need to already have an idea of where you're going to go with the story and what the main theme of it is going to be. So with that said, you know, people will sit down and they'll start typing or start writing, and if they don't really know how they're going to wrap up the story, they'll write 2,000 pages that kind of meander through nowhere. And then a lot of times, like I'll be proofreading some of those stories, and at some point I think, okay, you don't even know where you're going. You need to wrap it up. With that being said, sorry about that. I'm having technical difficulties here. So with that being said, if you know where you're going with your story, you need to divide it up into sections that make sense to you. So you need to really have a beginning, a middle, and an end. So to start off, whatever you're talking about, you want your first introduction chapter to really grab the reader. And that's the most important thing. And when I do a lot of proofreading for people, and the worst thing they can do is have a boring first introduction chapter. You really got to grab the reader if you want them to continue reading the rest of your book. That's probably the most difficult thing to start with, is the introductory chapter. And that's something that, you know, you'll write and you'll rewrite and you'll have people proofread and they'll say, no, I don't know, you might add this or take away this. So when you've got a strong introduction to your book, you want to let the reader know is going to be said first on into the book. So you want to give them an idea. Like with The Return of Mikey, I let them know up front, Mikey killed himself. So they know, you know, they're going to be reading about this story. And, you know, unfortunately, I lost my son. And that's not going to come as a surprise to them, thinking they're reading just a straight humor book. And then all of a sudden, somebody dies. So if it's a murder mystery, you know, you want to intrigue them. If it's a self-help book, you want to let them know, this is what I'm going to help you with. By the time you get done with this book, you will be able to, you know, you'll be able to do whatever or try to accomplish whatever it was that you were looking for help with. So that's the one thing that you need to spend the most time on when you are writing a book, is kind of showing the reader where you're going to go with the book. And then after that, you need to just sit down and start writing. And I always tell people, you need to just sit and start writing. And a lot of what you write is going to be thrown away, but that's okay. You know, you're going to go back and you're going to look at it and say, you know, I want to take this out. This just made no sense. This was rambling. This is really not pertinent to the story or whatever. And you're going to rearrange paragraphs and sentences and chapters a million times. But by the time you finally get all of these things grouped in the order you want to group them in, it will start to make even more sense to you. And you'll start saying, okay, this was a good way to start it. This is the next follow-up chapter. This I need to allude to something in the previous chapter or whatever. And you'll start really kind of pulling your work together a little more. Some of it you may discard. Some stuff you may say, I need to elaborate a little more on this. I would highly recommend having someone proofread it, even if it's your mom. I use my mom all the time. She's probably the best person with grammatical correctness in English that I know. And so just have somebody there who can read what you're writing and be honest with you. You need somebody who can be honest with you. You need somebody who can say, you know what, this chapter's boring and I was yawning, I want to put the book down, you may want to eliminate this chapter. So have somebody there that you can bounce some ideas off on after you kind of try to pull your stuff together. And they will come back with some great recommendations that you will want to follow. They may have some input that you don't like, but just be open to whatever they're saying. If you're going to someone whose opinion you respect, then you should listen to whatever feedback that they've got. The ending then, the last part of your book, that needs to really pull everything back together. So all of these little avenues that you've gone down, characters that you've developed, you need to really pull everything back together so there is a finite ending. Unless, of course, you know, if you're doing a series of books, there doesn't have to be an ending to the whole character crew, but there needs to be an ending to that story that the reader will be satisfied with. Because if they're not satisfied when they close the book, they're never going to read another one of your books. So if you're doing a fiction series and you think, this is a great way, I'm going to leave them hanging on this one thing, you can leave a little bit hanging, just enough to entice them to buy another book, but you can't really leave the whole story hanging. You know, you can't just say, boom, this is part one, you're going to have to read parts two and three to find out what happens to the character. That's really frustrating as a reader. I proofread some books that did that, and I know as a reader I would not buy them myself. So that's what I would recommend if you're trying to do a fictional series. You need to make sure that final chapter at least wraps up that particular story, and then you can start on another story with, a new plot line. It's like the Nancy Drew series that I grew up reading, you know, the murder of the, or the shadow of the clock, or whatever the books were called, you know, that little story would be wrapped up, and I was, you know, feeling perfectly happy when I turned my light off at night, because I knew what happened, and the bad guys got caught, and Nancy Drew was fine and safe. So when you're writing, you know, it's great to just sit down and write your thoughts. You can journal your thoughts. You don't have to be writing about a particular topic. I know a lot of times I have pulled some of my old journaling into a current book that I was writing that, you know, when I was journaling, it had nothing to do, no intentions of going into a book, but yet it ended up making its way into there. You know, I've basically kept a diary sometimes when I'm really struggling with issues in my life or struggling with whatever it was I was struggling with. I've kept a diary, and then when I'm writing about something else, it'll trigger a memory that I had of something that happened, and I'll go back and look at my notes, and I'll say, I really had a great insight. I had a flash of insight when I wrote this in my journal. I'm going to take that, and I'm going to reword it and put it into this book because it makes sense here. So, you know, if you want to write, then just, you don't have to be writing a book. Just write anytime you want. Sit down on your back porch and make a journal, make a diary, sit on the beach, whatever you do. Just write if you love to write, because eventually all of your thoughts, at some point, if you do have a book inside of you, if you have a desire to write a book, you will be able to go back and take the pieces of your life that you've put down on paper or on a computer, however you write, and pull them into this book to give it some depth. And that's something that is really lacking, I think, in a lot of written material today. I go into bookstores a lot, and I, you know, pull a book off the shelf. This looks good. The cover looks flashy, and you're intriguing, whatever it is. And I open the book up, and I start reading, and already I'm bored to death. There's no way I'm going to buy this book because there's no depth to the writing. And I've seen that in numerous pieces that I have proofread for people. And it's very difficult to tell somebody, you know, there's just no depth in your writing. I've made suggestions to kind of help him add to it. But if you're not really pulling from a dark place sometimes, you're not really getting the depth of feeling and emotion in your writing. Sometimes I think you have to experience the pain in order to get that darker side to help the light shine through. I remember one of the greatest lines I ever heard was, without darkness, without sunlight, there cannot be shadows. And without darkness, you will not have light places. So you kind of have to have the depth of emotion in you to really get the depth of writing on paper that will pull in the reader. Because even when I'm reading humor books that are straight humor, some of my favorite authors are Irma Bombeck and Patrick McManus. I love their writing because there is some seriousness to that. You know, in Bombeck's stuff, there's some sad stuff too, and there's, you know, philosophical stuff. So it's not just funny, humorous stuff. There's a real range of emotions there. And that's what keeps that writing interesting. That's what keeps that writing alive even after the person is dead. So that's what you want in your material, no matter what you're writing about. About the only thing that I would not say that you need a lot of, you know, pain to draw from is maybe, you know, a detective series. But you still need the mix of humor and seriousness in your writing. So it's not just a bland thing all across the board. So once you've gotten your book written, you need a proofreader, you need an editor, you need somebody who is not so attached to those words that they can go in and slash a few of them out, because we all are attached to our writing, but yet to an average reader, maybe we don't need all those filler words in there. And so it's really necessary to have a good editor that could come in and say, you know what, this whole sentence, it just doesn't need to be there. So that's the second thing you have to do after you've gotten your book together. Get a good editor or someone that you trust to edit your book and make some corrections, make some deletions, maybe some additions, and really help you get that manuscript polished. Because if you're wanting to shop for a big publishing company, which is very, very difficult to get a major publisher to look at you, you've got to have a polished manuscript. You've got, even if it's a partial manuscript, even if you're saying, I'm just sending you in three chapters, they've got to be as perfect as they can be, because otherwise it will go in the round file and nobody will ever look at your writing. So you got to really hook them in with a great storyline if you're looking for a publisher, and you've got to make the material that you're submitting really 100% accurate. So it's smooth, it's polished looking, it's grammatically correct, you don't have misspellings. Sounds elementary, sounds like that's a gimme, but yet it's not. I've seen people submit manuscripts where there were typos all over the place, and it made me irritated even just to read them as a proofreader. I can't even imagine what the person who was reading it at the publishing company, you know, thought. I'm sure after two paragraphs, it went in the trash can. So that's something that you really want to make sure is ready to go before you start shopping for a publisher. So this leads me on to, do you want a big publisher or do you want to self-publish it? Because you can go either way. Now, we can all self-publish our books now. It's very easy to do. Doesn't take a lot of computer expertise to self-publish a book. The problem with self-publishing is it's all on you. You are the only one who's going to be promoting this book. And so unless you've got some ties to an advertising company or a marketing company that will give you a good deal on it, it's very, very expensive to try to start advertising your book. So that is the biggest hindrance to self-publishing. However, you will get all the proceeds off of it. So it's, you know, it's got its pros and cons. When you self-publish a book, you'll get 100% of the proceeds, whatever the company that you're going with that's printing the book will tell you, you know, it's going to cost you maybe $2 or $2.50 to print this book. So if you sell it for $15, you're going to get $13 or $12.50 off of every book. You don't have to share it with anyone. Where a publishing company will normally give you a very small fraction of the printed book. And the last estimate that I had gotten was for a $15 to $20 book, the average author gets between 65 cents and $2. And $2 being on the very, very high side, most people fall around, you know, 85 cents to a dollar range. So when you're thinking, oh my gosh, I want to sell, you know, 100,000 books, and then you start looking at, well, if I get 70 cents a copy, you're not going to get rich off of that book, even if it sells 100,000 books. But chances are it may not. There's very few books out there that are going to be bestsellers, that are going to sell a million copies. It's awesome if you can get, but that's probably not going to happen, especially with the first book. So you really need to think about it before you're signing with the publisher. If that's what you want to do, you need to think about, okay, is this really financially going to get me to where I need to go? Obviously, there's more money in advertising with a big publisher With smaller publishers, they may publish your book, but they're not going to do any advertising for you. So, you know, they may have a few ties to different media magazines and publications that they can print your book title in so that libraries can order it or bookstores can order it, but they're not going to market it for you. They're not going to put money behind you. And so that's what you really need to look at. Then there's the self-publishing company where you are basically self-publishing, but they're charging you a fee to print it for you. And some of them will say, well, we'll publish it, your title in this publication, but we're going to charge you $5,000. So you need to really beware of what you're getting for your money if you go with something like that, because there's quite a few popping up now of these small self-publishing companies. And, you know, it may look on your book cover as it's been published by so-and-so press, you know, so it looks like you've got a publisher, but in reality, you just paid them to print your book, and you've paid them to put your title into a magazine that they put out of the list of their publications, but they're not really advertising it for you. They're not really doing marketing for you, so you are still going to be in charge of doing all the promotion on every sale of every book. I know a lot of people have gotten real disappointed with that because, you know, there's lots of promises that are made and they don't feel like they are being followed through with. So you really need to look at what is the publisher offering you? What is the self-publishing company offering you? Do you want to put that much money into it, or do you want to just publish it yourself on Amazon? So if you just choose to do that, the first thing you'll need to do is get the Library of Congress number. And I think now on Amazon, they actually will help you do that. It's a probably like $250 or something, but to get the ISBN number that will be put on your book. So if you're doing self-publishing, there's a lot of little things, details that you will need to take care of like that. And as I said, I'm happy to help anybody who is wanting to go that route, but I'm just kind of giving you a brief overview of the ins and outs of publishing, whether you do it yourself or you have a major publisher. I do want to go back to the major publishing for just a second. I have met a couple of authors who are pretty well-known authors, and they actually owe their publishing company money. Because what happens is they'll say, oh, here's a, you know, $50,000 advance. Well, an advance is just like a loan. It's not saying here is a bonus of $50,000 for signing. It's saying I'm going to give you $50,000 up front that's going to be deducted off of the sale of your books. So if your books don't sell, you owe the publisher $50,000. And I know two authors who have been fighting their publishing company, and both major publishing companies, that they are in debt to their publisher, and they're very unhappy with it, and they don't feel like they were really allowed to market their books the way they wanted to. One of them in particular was not even happy with the finished product of the book, because what came out of the editor's station after the publishing company's editor got through with it did not look at all the way the author submitted it. So the author felt like the whole message of the book had been lost because they had tweaked it in another way. And then they're trying to, you know, force the author to go out and make these appearances to promote a book that he did not even believe in himself. He didn't stand behind his own book because it had been changed so much. So that's just a few things you need to be wary of. You know, it's great to have a major publisher, but if you get one, you need to make sure that how your book ends up is something that you will feel proud to stand behind, because you're legally bound then to market that book. And if it doesn't sell, you are legally bound to pay back any advance that they have given you. So that's just one of the hang-ups with the major publishing company. So that is all I will say about the book writing. But for anybody who has any questions, please contact me through the Angel Coaches Network, through Facebook. You can instant message me, and I will be happy to answer any questions. All right, so the second thing that I'm going to get into now is ghosts. Ghosts of loved ones. in particular. And I'm calling them ghosts because that's, you know, people, the word ghost has this connotation of something scary, you know, something that might be sinister or evil. And so I'm calling spirits ghosts for that purpose right now so that people will start understanding a ghost is not someone who's a scary presence, or to me it's not. It's a spirit of someone who's passed on, and so their physical body is no longer here, but their energy body is still around you. And when you lose a loved one, the first thing you feel is this horrible absence of their physical presence, and you really feel that you have just completely lost them from your life for good. And that is perfectly normal. That's how we all feel. First, you know, I had this person standing in front of me and now they're gone, and you're longing for their physical presence. You want to hear their voice, you want to feel their touch, you want to, you know, lay your eyes on them and be able to touch them, and you can't do that anymore. So you're missing them, you're mourning them, and you're grieving them, and it's an extremely painful, excruciating process that you go through just getting used to the absence of their physical body. But what oftentimes happens is it may not happen right at first, it may take a month or 2 months, however long, you will start getting these little signs that they are still around you. And, you know, a lot of people want to dismiss those signs, and they want to say, well, this is just a coincidence. You know, maybe Joe loved, you know, roses, and I just keep getting rose petals popping up in the weirdest places that I know there was no rose, and nobody was holding a rose, and yet here's these rose petals. I mean, it'll be bizarre little things that you can explain away or try to explain away. But sometimes after a certain point, as I did with my son, you start feeling stupid for still trying to explain things away that really can't be explained. You know, I kept getting dimes. I don't know why it was a dime, not a quarter. I would have preferred a quarter. But I kept getting dimes in the weirdest places that I knew there could not have been a dime. There wasn't a dime before. Nobody else was in this room but me, and I walk back in the room and here's a dime in the middle of the bed, or here's a dime on the floor that I just vacuumed. Here's a dime in my bra. I know I didn't put a dime down in my bra. And I kept having strange things happen. And there's a lot of different unexplained things that happened after Mikey died, and a lot of them were so related to him. And the radio that I'd never had trouble with in my car before, suddenly changing stations by itself, and then there would be a song on that he liked that had been a song that we'd played at his funeral, or a song that was talking about somebody who had passed on. You know, things like that, you know, you can say, well, it must have been some kind of a, you know, wiring glitch, but yet that had never happened before. My radio had never changed channels by itself before. My printer had never come on by itself and started printing a page that was out of Mikey's eulogy that I had not just tried to start printing. I mean, there was so many weird things that kept happening after my son died. I finally had to say, okay, Mikey, I get it. You're trying to show me that you're still around me. And I think that's especially true with younger people when they die, because their mom. And I think Mikey was just trying to check in with me and tell me he's okay. So now I realize I am out of time. So we will get to the relationship on the next call. And I thank you all very much for listening.